Session number 18577, Reel 6.
Bhakti Meredith, Reel 6.
I think probably we would have most to fear from them in any future conflict, because if we take the Prussians and the Serbs, who aren't very far removed from each other in temperament or geography, they have always been a bit of a thorn in the flesh of the rest of Europe. Anyway, as far as the ordinary Germans are concerned, I think they're a different kettle of fish. The ordinary German soldier, I don't think was was very much different at all to the British soldier. Yes, you're taught to hate each other in war, but I never found that I could develop hate as such for any particular individual. Hate of what the Germans were doing as a race, maybe, but I don't think that was representative of all Germans. I didn't feel any animosity towards the German individually at any time. In fact, I suppose I would pray for a speedy ending to the war for themselves as well as for us.
Did these Latvians or Estonians or whatever they were show any apprehension about returning to their own homes?
I don't know, because at that time probably there was a feeling of euphoria. The war had ended for us. We were going to be on our way home at some time, however soon we didn't know. The war had ended for them. They were free then. They were being looked after by the Allies. Whether they were to be, they may not have known what it would have been like in their own country at that point in time. I don't know. Whether they'd left Latvia or Estonia freely and voluntarily, I don't know. Maybe they found themselves, maybe they, if they left voluntarily, that they may have felt they'd do better with the Germans than they would with the Russians. I don't know. We came across some Russians at one point who had been liberated, and I think they must have been Mongols, and they were a different kettle of fish to the Estonian prisoners. These particular people had been either forced labour or prisoners, but were free when we ran across them. And I think when the tank stopped in one particular place, it was swarmed by these particular people who'd probably been around killing all the Germans they could lay their hands on and waving their pistols about, and a completely undisciplined sort of group.
They were civilians who'd acquired pistols?
They were, I imagine, displaced persons who'd been put in forced labour by the Germans. They're obviously a mongoloid type. They're obviously Russians who, once the Germans had been overrun, had themselves run amok and taken arms. It was only a brief encounter. Get off our tank, we're on our way, sort of thing. It was mainly settling down to occupation duties then. Hanover appalled me, and I think we saw Hamburg also, but Hanover, which had once been a beautiful city, I can remember walking through what had been a street, and there was no more than perhaps a metre or 2 metres of path through on which you could walk, and just a sloping mountain of rubble on each side of this path, where once had been beautiful buildings, and the people were living, coming up from holes in the ground, cellars maybe, from underneath this rubble. I don't mean just liberate, I mean they were actually living in these holes in the rubble. once again, we were stationed somewhere outside the city itself. And not all of Hamburg had been destroyed. Their beautiful opera house had been destroyed. But there was another theatre which was being used to present an opera, and it was the first time I'd been to the opera in my life. And it was a production, a German production of Hansel and Gretel, which, being a well-known fairy story, was easy to follow, even if you couldn't understand the whole language. We also had a ballet presentation. I think it must have been the Sadler's Wells ballet came across, and I think Robert Helton danced The Rake's Progress, and I think one of the other ballets was Les Sylphides. So we were, for the first time, we'd seen a bit of culture in 5 years. I remember somebody in Hamburg giving me a set of prints, which I still have, of some of the buildings before the war. And they were really beautiful buildings, but of course, maybe they've been resurrected now, I don't know, I've never been back to Hamburg. So how did I finish the war? Well, as people were being demobbed, different sort of jobs became necessary to fill several sorts of jobs. And I went to the officer's mess in charge of the officer's mess. I was called officer's mess caterer. I didn't do any catering, but it was a job of running the mess. And I suspect I got that because the regiment was going to be wound down, and all the regimental accounts have got to be finalised and what have you. And since, before I joined the army, I'd been in local government finance. I was only a junior person, but because it was local government finance, they probably thought I knew everything about accounts and what have you. Well, of course, I didn't really. But nevertheless, it was an interesting interlude. And the mess was in a huge old farmhouse which had been extended over the generations of the family. As the family had grown and the farm had grown, so the building had been extended. It was quite a beautiful building, really, because you went into the main door and it was like a huge open hall, and then a small flight of steps up to a mezzanine floor where there was a huge dining room. This is why it was the officer's mess. And then a garret floor with bedrooms off, so it made an ideal officer's mess.
This is at Hanover?
Yeah, just outside Hanover.
Buxtehude?
We were initially at Buxtehude, and I think it was in that area, but I don't really know. So that was an interesting interlude. I think The first month I prepared the accounts, I had a lot of complaints, people saying, you must have left something off, this is far below what it normally is, this bill. Then I realised my mistake, I wasn't taking my own commission. Because it didn't last for very long, because the regiment was being gradually put in a state of suspended animation, people were being demobilised. But before we were finally wound up, the adjutant was going off to Brussels GHQ to arrange for the rest of the postings. And he said, well, I'm going to Brussels. Would you like a job at Brussels HQ? And like a fool, I thought, Brussels, regimentation, spit and polish, no thank you, not likely. Now that was a bit silly, really. Because Brussels would have been a superb place to go to. I'd been there once on a weekend leave. Once the war was running down a bit, you had Brussels leaves, which were quite good. I mean, not terribly cultural because we hadn't become used to being cultured again. But that would have been a sensible thing to have done. But I said, no, I don't think I want to go to Brussels HQ, thank you very much. So I said, well, how about something like you're doing now? And I thought, this is the job for me. Yes, I can cope with this. So when he came back from Brussels, he said, "I've got you another job." He said, "Another mess caterer." So I said, "Fine, where is it?" He said, "Military detention barracks at Munster." I said, "You're joking." So he said, "No, well, that's what you said, wasn't it?" So there we go.
Did you go?
Well, I haven't got any option. Yes, I went to this detention. Well, it was a military prison, in fact. And it was all right for me because I was running a mess. But I can't say that I was happy there, because it was alien to my whole view of the army. I mean, if you're a red cap, who have nothing to do with the MPSC, but a red cap to an ordinary soldier is the scum of the earth. Unjustifiably so, probably, if you look at it in the proper perspective, but nevertheless, you wouldn't touch a red cap with a barge pole. And similarly, I wouldn't have touched the MPSC with a barge pole, so I was really horrified.
Anyway, MPSC, what does MPSC stand for?
Military Provost Staff Corps. Because everybody there was a staff sergeant, because they were virtually prison warders. And most of the people who were in this military prison were there not for terribly criminal offences. I mean, going absent without leave, maybe, or the majority of them were very inoffensive people from sort of Brussels HQ who had been caught fiddling on the black market. So maybe if I'd gone to Brussels, I'd have been caught fiddling and finished up there anyway. But I was quite popular because, having learned the ropes in with the yeomanry, I'd found quite a few wineries, and particularly distilleries, out in the country. And I knew where there was a very good still where you could buy what they called Doppelkorn, which was a type of German gin, and another one called Doppelkorn was a type of whiskey. Steinhager was a type of German gin. And I also found quite a few places where you could got wine. So I had a very well-supplied mess, which made it a convivial mess. This won't go well with you being a teetotaler, but of course we weren't. Not many of us were teetotal when we were in the army. But so they weren't a very intellectual bunch, and
what impression did you get of the conditions under which the prisons had to suffer at Munster?
I don't think they suffered terribly much. I'm not sure whether it was called a Gefanger Kaserne, so I think it had probably been a German military prison before.
It means prisoners' barracks.
Yeah. I think it was well appointed. I think they've got plenty of space, and they got plenty of food. In fact, we had one prisoner who used to sort of, he'd get out under the wire and he'd go and see his girlfriend for a couple of weeks, then he'd come back. I don't think it was a place which held much terror for the prisoners. I think a lot of the staff were a bit thick. Some weren't. Some were surprisingly they were completely unlike warder types. And I often wonder what they were doing there. I suspect it must have been because of perhaps promotion, easy promotion, which meant more money. Some of them may have been regulars, of course, I don't know. Some were very thick. There was one staff sergeant who couldn't really count. He'd take out a party of what they called soldiers under sentence, because we were deprived of rank and everything. They take out a party of soldiers under sentence, and when he marched them back, they'd have to be reported into the guard room. The guard room commander said, "Well, how many have you got, Staff Biggs?" And he said, six. So the chap said, "Well, where's the other one then?" And I wasn't very popular amongst them at times, because if we used to be invited to other messes for parties and what have you. And there was a lot of immature French brandy about at the time, and if you had one or two too many of those, well, I in particular wouldn't remember everything that I was going to should say or shouldn't say. And more than once I found myself woken up in my billet, and my uniform's been dirty. I said, "Well, how's this? What's happened?" Well, apparently I've been calling them all a shower of everything under the sun, so they chucked me in the ditch before we got back. So I wasn't very careful telling the MPSC what I thought about them.
We're talking about 45, 46, are we?
Pardon?
Are we talking about 1945?
Oh, 1940... This would be 1946. Yeah. This was after the end of the war. Yes, 1946. Just pending demob, really.
We hear a lot about the so-called black market in Germany after the end of the war. Did you ever come across that?
Only in a very minor way. I was never involved in the black market. I think if you'd been a quartermaster sergeant or somebody who had access to a lot of stores and what have you, yes, you probably would have been involved, because people would have approached you. Nobody ever approached me in my capacity as being in charge of a mess, probably because it was a military prison. And but my parents used to, throughout my army career, always used to send me a parcel. They must have foregone things themselves, because they would send me things like coffee. Across the road from the barracks, there was a little bar, cafe, and the chappie who ran it had the contract for the pig swill from the barracks. I'm quite convinced he used to take the pig swill away from the barracks, and that was what was served up in the cafe in the evening after it had been dressed up. I did have some coffee sent to me, and because they'd been kind to me, they invited me across for meals, etc. I'd give them the odd packet of coffee, and this probably would have fetched a small fortune on the black market. And when they said, "Well, what do you want for it?" I said, "Well, I don't want anything for it." I mean, I didn't think about selling things or anything like that. I don't think the majority of people did. Not the ordinary person, anyway. They said, "Well, you've got to have a present or something." And they offered me a string of amber beads, which would have been worth quite a lot of money. And I wasn't prepared to take their jewellery or mementos for this sort of thing. It wasn't what I was there for. So no, I didn't come into contact with the black market. And I don't know anybody who was involved with it.
How long did the Munster job go on for?
Until I was demobbed.
When was that about?
October 1946.
Were you getting impatient for demob?
Well, yeah, too true. May 45, so I'd remain with the staffs until... I can't remember when I left them. It may have been sometime in 1946.
Was there any...
January, February, March.
Was there any discontent over the slowness of demob?
No, I don't recall there was particularly. Don't forget that when the war in Europe ended, those of us who hadn't been in say since 1939, our pay books were all marked Far East, so we were eligible for Far East service. And I expected to go to the Far East, quite honestly.
How do you feel now about having taken part in the Second World War?
I think it was something that had to be done. I was a volunteer, not a conscript. And goodness knows what would have happened to Europe if Britain hadn't stood up to be counted. We were the only ones, Conrad, who stood up to be counted. The only ones in the whole of Europe. And when it got Czechoslovakia, yes, we let go. Poland, we stood up to be counted. And this was enough. And I always feel that Chamberlain has been grossly, grossly misjudged, because he is derided and maligned as an appeaser. Yeah, okay, he appeased, but for what reason? If we had gone to war in 1937, we still wouldn't be sitting here talking. He gave us another 12 months from 1938, when I think Munich was, until 1939, at least 12 months, in which to get a bit more preparation. And we only just scraped through. We only just scraped through. And we wouldn't have scraped through then, apart from the Americans giving us aid, would we? Even if we had to pay for it. So I think it was something we had to do.